we're going to open a hearing on Senate Bill 885.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 885 requires written consent prior to an autopsy not related to a death requiring investigation. The bill specifies who may authorize that autopsy and requires development and use of an autopsy consent form.
Thank you, F. We have a very distinguished guest to appear on our stand this morning. We'll ask the Senate President to come forward and his entourage.
Thank you, Chair Fisher and members of the Human Resources Committee, Senator Starr, Senator Brown, Senator Morissette, and Northern High Committee Administrator Taylor. My name is Peter Courtney, and I live at 2925 Island View Drive North, and that's in Salem, at 97303, and I'm a state senator, and my district is number 11, and that includes major portions of Salem and in the area of Jervis Brooks and also Woodburn. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 885, and this bill involves autopsy forms, involves a situation that was brought to my attention by Richard Aguirre, the Statesman Journal, and with me to testify to the specifics of the bill and also with a personal story as to why this bill, I believe, is necessary, is Ann Cruzen. Her husband Mark is seated behind us. It does involve, as they say, a form involving the granting permission to perform an autopsy, as well as I believe it involves the area issues of organ donation. I understand also the Oregon Health Science University is here, as well as the Health Division of the State of Oregon. They have an interest in this bill. I will simply like to hand off the baton to Ann Cruzen. Before I do that, I want to thank the Senate Rules Committee for being willing to introduce this as a Rules Committee bill. As a committee bill, as you'll see, they did that. So, of course, one of the co-chairs is here, Senator Brown, so I'm very grateful for that. So with that, Senator Bill Fisher, and I do appreciate very much your willing to take up this issue. I know your agenda is full. And with that, I'd like to ask that Ann Cruzen be allowed to speak to the particulars of the bill, Chair Fisher.
Yes, we're happy to have your testimony, ma'am.
Thank you, Senator Fisher, Chairman, and committee members. My name, for the record, is Joan Ann Cruzen. I prefer to be called Ann. And I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 885, which pertains to autopsy consent. This is something that has stemmed from a personal experience that we had and are still anticipating completion. What we propose to do is see that hospitals and other facilities in Oregon provide both a limited and an unlimited autopsy consent form. We feel it's important to separate the two because there seems to be some confusion as to what constitutes a unlimited and limited form from our experience. I have before you some of the documents that we were given. You can take a look at the first form, which is the consent for tissue donation, and you can clearly see on the second page, which was actually the reverse of the first page, that it was refused. On that first page, in the middle of the sheet, it does list that the different tissues and other organs that would be suitable for donation are listed, and this is something that I felt would be necessary to see in the other form also, meaning the other autopsy permit. Did you want to see this also? I do have copies of it. Okay. So, keeping that in mind, the definitions and the fine line between donation and what occurs at an autopsy need to be clarified. We felt that when we expressed upon the death of our child, we said that we wanted nothing done to our daughter's remains unless it was absolutely necessary to determine why she died. We were not interested in benefiting the school. At this point in time, we were very much concerned that we had no idea why our daughter had had her attack. We were unprepared for the process of trying to make the different. I'm trying to clarify this because of the different forms involved. There's different parameters involved with the autopsy, and we were told that our concerns would be met. And given the first form does list the different organs, we did mark refused on that. So when we were given the second form to give permission to actually do the procedure, it was with that understanding that nothing would be removed or retained or donated or gifted to anybody, because the idea was is we did not want our daughter being taken apart and used for any benefit. We just did not know why she died, which is why we wanted Stanford physicians to direct the autopsy. They would have a good idea after supposedly talking with other doctors as to why she died, given her records or her symptoms. I would think that they would have been able to determine what would have been necessary for retrieval to study.
And yes. Because it's a little confusing where you've duplicated, I believe these forms are front and back in their original form, and we have them as two pages.
That's correct.
So if the committee would recognize that the first two pages on this consent for tissue and organ donation are front and back of the original, then the second two are front and back of an original, I believe a front and back of original.
Yes.
So there's four altogether that we show, where in reality there was just two slips of paper with front and back used on both. And it was a little, you helped clarify that for me in my office, and that's why I'm clarifying it here, because it was a little difficult for me to understand at first exactly how one related to the other.
Oh, yeah. Well, looking at the forms again, the second form in particular, meaning the autopsy permit, there is a section midway down that refers to exceptions. And that exception, there is a word written, which is none. We learned after, during depositions and after the fact, that the pathologists and the other people at OHSU see that word as meaning there are no restrictions. We have no objections. But strangely enough, that is followed by pending needs of Stanford physicians. Now, again, keeping in mind the first form that we were given and that we clarified without end our wishes that our daughter not be experimented on, we were told several months ago that, well, since we signed an unlimited form, that means that they can keep, take, do whatever they want with our daughter's remains. We basically said, you can have whatever you want. I disagree. I would like to point out that we did have a discussion regarding donating our daughter's eyes. Being she was immunosuppressed, we said we did not want anything removed. Even though that was a tissue that would qualify for donation, we said no. We wanted nothing removed. So, keeping in mind the second form, why is eyes not written under exceptions? Because right above it, it says, this permit would allow you to take everything including eyes. It was read to us after the asterisk behind the word complete, and it says none. So, it means none. We wanted nothing removed from our daughter. Otherwise, it should have had the word eyes there, which then would have been a warning to us that they did indeed intend to do an autopsy where they would remove and retain everything from her brain down through her abdominals. At this time, I wanted to address that we have a settlement agreement with the hospital where they were going to provide us with both limited and unlimited form. We're hoping that that is something that is being presented as we speak. I am concerned that other families might have to undergo what we've gone through. It's been a terrible 3 years. We are doing this out of respect to our daughter. I know she would have not wanted this done. I don't see how much clearer we could have been. The woman that took the information down, we were not allowed to write on the form with the exception of the signature. So we were trusting her documentation. She has been doing this for 27 years. They do about, I believe she said she did 50 autopsies a year. So she's experienced, and I would feel that to have somebody sit there during their deposition and tell us that we had no exceptions was very frustrating, because as non-medical people, we're not quite sure how much clearer we could have been. That unlimited form became a limited form given our exceptions. So, in conclusion, to allow time for questions, I know I have a lot of information in front of you, self-explanatory. We were frustrated because Stanford, the hospital that we requested the information from and who we called, which is how we found out our daughter's heart and lungs were removed and then lost, they have no idea of why our daughter died. We did meet with them. We drove down there the summer after our daughter passed away, and they did tell us again that without any information, slides, anything, which we did request be sent down, but they were lost at the hospital. They weren't found for quite a while. We'd still held on to the hopes that we'd at least understand why our daughter is not here with us anymore. I don't understand why Stanford was never involved. They were not called. We were not called. There was no follow-up after the organs were lost. I feel frustrated because we, again, were as specific as we could be given the situation, and we would not like to see anybody have to suffer through this again. In conclusion, I would think that it would be good for the public to have an opportunity to have time to look at the different autopsy forms. Hopefully they're all standardized so that they know what the definitions are according to medical world or the people who actually receive them. I did ask Salem Hospital to provide me with a copy of their consent, and I was refused. I was told that to be responded to in kindness, but that they do not share their forms with community members, which I promptly reminded them, these are the forms that you give to community members. But I understand there's a special time that they said that they need to present this, which, again, in my mind, would just reinforce that it's taken advantage of, that people are at a very hard time in their life when they are asked to sign a form such as this. And I believe my husband and I were very clear. We were prepared. We were not happy to have our daughter at OHSU. We wanted to have her back at Stanford. And so we were very careful in our wording. And the one time she returns back, this is what happens. So we'll conclude with that, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I wonder if you have a fairly thick file here. I wonder, would you just kind of walk us through and just describe each item that you've got in here a little bit? You helped me out when you were met with me in my office.
Okay.
I think it might be good for the committee here to have just a little more time to.
Okay.
I'm not sure that they would have questions formulated yet.
Okay. Very good. The first form, this one that I happen to have here, is actually incomplete. I was missing a couple of copies. My husband was helping me put them together.
You're welcome to have mine if you'd like to go ahead and do that. I'll look on with my staff. You're welcome. Yeah.
Thank you. First page is basically an introduction. I felt that just a little bit of groundwork was necessary. Obviously, it's not set with a conclusion because that's yet to be determined. The next form is on an OHSU letterhead, which is the consent for tissue and organ donation. It does list the order given that would give authorization to authorize the donation, and they do list the different items and tissues that would be usable. Now, I would like to address the paragraph that's underneath the listing of tissues and organs. It says here, while it is hoped that the gift may be used for transplantation or therapy, I understand that there is always the possibility that the gift might not be suitable for such use. In that event, the gift may be utilized to advance medical knowledge through medical research and training. Now, please keep that in mind. You'll hear that again on the next form or something similar. Distribution and use determination of these gifts will be coordinated by the procurement program in accordance with accepted medical and ethical standards. Now, why are we not being explained what those are? I would like to know what happens if the heart or other organ that I donate or other items, what is happening to them if they're not being utilized? Most people have the idea that their loved one's heart will beat in somebody else's chest. Well, that might not be the case. If you were to look to the next form, of course, it'll be passing at the top where it says consent is refused, listing, keeping in mind all the different organs that were listed on the first page. The unlimited autopsy permit, again, on OHS letterhead, presented to us by the same person. The item in question is the exceptions. You could see that just above midway, and there is an asterisk. The word following exceptions is none. Now, if you go above, you'll see there's a word complete with the asterisk in parentheses. If I see the word complete and I see the word none, I would say none means none. You're not taking anything. Otherwise, as I explained earlier, why did she not write eyes there? Because that paragraph does go on to say, I further authorize the taking of tissues in all major organs, including eyes. We had just clarified the best we could. We did not want anything removed from our daughter. Why did she not put eyes down? That would have told us what direction they were taking this. But for some strange reason, in medical terminology, none means we have no exceptions. So why in the world are they writing pending identified needs?
May I ask?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
I see Dr. Higginson is here. Maybe this is for him. But to your knowledge, how many places do autopsies around the state, and how many different kinds of forms are there?
Well, this is something I've tried to do some research on. I would understand that majority of hospitals would provide an autopsy form, whether they do them there or not. I could not say. I did speak to a couple of funeral homes, City View in particular, and he did say that they do autopsies there. So I couldn't give you a specific number, though.
I guess your intent is then to have a standardized form
at all different facilities that would ask for consent. So whether that's nursing home or hospital or university, I would think it should pertain to anybody who requests.
Good. Thank you.
You're welcome. So keeping that in mind, looking at the notations here, it does go on. What is the next page, which is actually the back of the first page for the permit? It does list contact numbers, and it was at this point that the woman that was taking our information down would leave the room to confer. At the deposition, we understand she said she doesn't remember leaving because she said we had no concerns. And I thought, well, perhaps she's psychic, because how can she say so-and-so is aware of plan? And we thought this was an illustration as to why we had many, many doubts, many, many concerns, and we were assured over and over that everything would be met and the phone numbers were available to clarify any possible problems from occurring. Which is another thing that came to mind during the depositions, were a lot of the procedures were guesses. I would think that if they had made these calls, they would have had the method to retrieve or store or length of time in formaldehyde or any of the given issues that became problems later would have been easily solved had this been done as written. Yes.
I'm sorry. May I?
Yes, Senator.
Okay. Reasons for autopsy evaluation of heart transplant.
Again, we did not put that because it says that we just wanted them to follow the direction of what Stanford needed, and that was left at that. What we wanted to know was why our daughter died. We were not interested in any medical procedures.
But they wrote this.
Yes, they wrote everything. We did
they
not.
They wrote everything.
Yes.
Okay, and so they put the reason for the autopsy was evaluation of...
Yes.
She didn't have a... Did she have a heart transplant?
Yes, our daughter did have a heart transplant at Stanford University.
She did have the heart transplant.
3.5 years prior.
Okay, and so this was to evaluate to see if that was... might have been the cause of death.
Exactly.
Okay.
She did not demonstrate any of the symptoms of rejection. As parents, we were pretty much schooled before we came back to Oregon what to watch for. If you notice, it says there underneath staff requesting autopsy report, Sean Scorville, I never had an opportunity to speak or meet with him. The family requests that pediatric cardiologist Dr. Drukas, that is misspelled, not be involved in the autopsy. And the reason for that is when our daughter was a patient at OHSU, when she was 12, she did have open heart surgery. It was a partial repair. We were told that within a year's time, to see how she tolerated the surgery, they would do the follow-up completion procedure. It was when she turned 13, we were informed that there was nothing more that could be done for her. And we felt that she had just turned 13. How can you tell a 13-year-old that we're going to give up? We were not going to give up on our daughter. We felt that we would ask for other opinions, and we were able to get three other opinions from three other medical centers outside of Oregon. We did wind up taking our daughter to Stanford Medical Center, where she obtained a heart transplant 2 months after, and had remarkable, wonderful life. And again, I sit here and I wish I could talk about how grateful we are for the time that she had and move on, but we have this to deal with. We will never know why she died. Stanford is forever kept from having that information. They would have been able to help other kids had they been able to follow through with what happened to our daughter. But that, again, is gone. So, following up, there is a letter that we received from the OHSU attorney. This letter came 7 months after our daughter died. We were waiting for a letter from Peter Stenzel. We were told by somebody, I believe, that is here. Barbara Glidewell told us that we would be receiving it shortly, but it was going through legal departments. And come to find out at depositions, Peter Stenzel denies ever having any knowledge of writing anything along those lines. So we were pretty much forced to file a tort claim. We gave ourselves, our attorney tried desperately to get some sort of response. After 1 year's time, we did file suit. The explanations, I put them here because I keep going over this, and I don't understand why there are explanations given without absolutely no proof. I've been able to actually disprove some of this. If you were to go on to the page following the FedEx, I was talking to some FedEx personnel who then informed me again and again, which then sent me to their legal department, that they do not, under any circumstances, they have no forms available to hospitals, any programs that would allow them to transport human remains, because there would be no way for them to ever replace them. There seemed to be a lot of concern why they kept the remains, because they were worried that they would lose them during the holiday rush. There seems to be lots of reasons why, other than consideration for the family, and that we were just on pause. I could not believe our daughter was not there with us at Christmas. It was just like, well, what's the rush? We're just going to keep them around. Now, keeping in mind that we said we did not want our daughter used for educational purposes, we found out on January 11th, the month after she died, that they were going to show her heart, her lungs, and her lower abdominals to a autopsy rounds conference. It was determined at that point is why they couldn't find the heart and lungs. But nobody mentioned anything about her lower abdominals. And I will share with you at this point that Stephanie had insights were reversed. Her anatomy was just a little off, that it would have been something very unusual, and they probably would have wanted to see that. Now, we were told our daughter's remains were boxed and ready to go. They even said in this letter from Mr. Norton that they checked at FedEx. Okay, so if they went to FedEx, that means it was boxed and wrapped. Well, is it that, or is it that it was sitting there ready to be shown at a conference on January 11th? They thought that perhaps it had been sent to Stanford. We've been getting a lot of conflicting information, so this all stems back to we didn't want any of this. We would have loved to avoid this at all costs, and we thought we took what steps we could to avoid any problems. I do have another deposition in its entirety from Renata Niederloh, the woman I have been speaking of, who did the requesting from us, and it is self-explanatory. I will not go into depth with that there. There are a couple of points, though, I did want to point out. It says here on number 12, I underlined, she says, the question was, do you recall any discussion with them about refusal? And the answer was, I really do not. They just made it clear they did not want any tissue donation. Now, how is the difference between donating in that sense as opposed to during an autopsy letting them keep everything? I believe it's one and the same. You pretty much give up your rights to it and allow them to do what they will with it. Lastly, to follow up, in conclusion, this is pretty much what was addressed to us. The letter from the attorney says that we signed an unlimited form which allows them to keep everything. So, again, this is what brings us here today, why we feel it's necessary to specify two separate forms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there further questions?
Oh, I'm sorry. Does anybody have any other questions before?
No, I'm waiting for Dr. Higginson.
Thank you very much.
You'll be here, so
yes, I will.
If it comes up that we need further questions or further information,
yes,
we may recall you. So
certainly.
Thank you for being willing to go through this for someone else's benefit.
Thank you.
Barbara Glidewell and Grant Higginson.
Mr. Chair, shall I proceed?
Yes, go right ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm Barbara Glidewell. My position at OHSU is Director of Patient Relations and Hospital Ombudsman. I work at Oregon Health Sciences University, 3181 Southwest Sam Jackson Park Road in Portland, Oregon. You have our written response to the bill that is proposed, and I would like to say that definitely OHSU would like to convey its support for the concepts and the principles that are reflected in this bill. It definitely is a good idea. It's good to have statutory backup on any facility that has policies that are as important as the one being discussed today. In fact, OHSU Hospital, and I would assume in all likelihood other hospitals in the state, currently do obtain formal authorization for clinical autopsies by the appropriate next of kin. So on behalf of OHSU, we would certainly believe the requirement for signed autopsy permit as proposed by the language in this bill is an excellent idea. There's a few suggestions or comments that I would like to make relative to language that might possibly be included in the bill. The forms that exist now, at least for OHSU, have an area that allows for telephone consent that is monitored by two people at the facility when they're calling a family member that might be out of town, too far away to come to sign the consent form. And it might be important to leave that area on the form so that a two-party consent can be obtained by telephone for the convenience of family if they wish. Another opportunity, I suppose, would be to fax the document to the family for their signature within conversation by phone about the contents of the document, the family signing it and then faxing it back. The second is relative to the testing that family members might request on autopsy. Typically, clinicians will stipulate what they think would be the most informative clinically for the underlying cause of the death or other circumstances that should be investigated. If family asks for further or other testing that has not been recommended by the clinician, there would only be the issue of whether, if it's not felt necessary to determine the cause of death, but it's another reason, then perhaps the family should have to pay for that, because autopsies, at least at present, and as far as I have worked at OHSU, which is 28 years, we do not charge at OHSU for autopsies. So if there would be extra, it might be required.
You have, can someone ask for an autopsy that where none has been required or asked for by law, can they, do they then have to pay for that?
I have never seen a family be charged for autopsy. Sometimes family will say, you know, you haven't asked for it, but we would really appreciate it. So we present that to the clinicians and our pathology service, and I've not seen it denied. Rarely. I can't even imagine a time, remember a time that it was denied, unless it was absolutely an understanding of the cause of death and really no particular purpose for it. But if family is asking, generally it is done.
Do you have any idea of how much an autopsy would cost? Or?
I don't. I'm sorry, I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Then one other thing that I think is important is that, you know, if there's going to be a model form developed, I think that several facilities in this state might want to offer suggestions so that it can be a form that it can be utilized sort of universally or globally across the state. And I think that OHSU would be glad to contribute to that. And then finally, I would just like to say that when a person is asking a family if they would like to have autopsy or would like to consent to autopsy, it's at a time, the most exquisite time of grief that anyone I could imagine. And so the information that is given to the family may be almost more than they are prepared to hear. So there should be some discretion or some sensitivity around describing the details of autopsy per se, because it's very graphic. And I just think that it should be noted that there should be some comment made about the sensitivity of what that autopsy consists of. There are graphic details of the clinical tasks that occur. And at the time of requesting autopsy, I'm not sure that family would want to hear the details of the examination. That's all I'd like to say about that.
Chair Fisher, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the State Public Health Officer with the Department of Human Services, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 885, which, as you've heard, would require a standardized informed consent process for all non-required autopsies. Currently, autopsies are required, and a process for getting consent for autopsies are required of all hospitals as part of their licensure. The state medical examiner, Dr. Karin Gunson, who I've spoken with about this bill, called a number of the hospitals around the state, and indeed they were was told that they do have a consent form and that they do follow a process. However, as you've also heard, this currently is not required in law, and the department does believe that it would be a good idea to come up with a standardized form and a standardized consent process to ensure that families, when they're making a decision during a very, very stressful time, are as fully informed as possible so that they can make a decision that they're going to be comfortable with. The bill does call for myself as a state public health officer and a state medical examiner to create this form, and this is something that would not be a burden for us to do, and to get that form out to all appropriate facilities, and it's something that we could accomplish within existing resources. Thanks.
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Dr. Higginson, what do you mean by all hospitals perform autopsies?
I'm sorry, and I missed Mr. Chair, Senator Morris said I misspoke myself there. All hospitals are required to have a process for obtaining consent for an autopsy. Not all hospitals perform autopsies, and you have to have a qualified pathologist at the hospital or that comes to the hospital to do that in order to actually conduct the autopsy itself.
Okay. The other question: OHSU has not charged for an autopsy upon request. What's the standard practice? Do hospitals, you don't know?
Chair Fister, Senator Morris said, I do not know that question, but I could see it seen as if it's not something that the attending physician believes needs to be done to determine the cause of death. If it really was a voluntary request of the family, I could see it being considered as a test or a procedure that was being done and charged for that, but I do not have that information.
May I?
Yes, sir.
I guess I'm kind of curious about where autopsies are. Are there facilities around the state that perform autopsies in rural Oregon, or do they usually have to send? Do they usually have to do it in a faraway place? Or I guess I'm still interested in who performs the autopsies other than OHSU.
Chair Fisher, Senator Morissette, I would have to do some digging to actually get good information on that. You know, I can tell you how it works for the state medical examiner, and autopsies are done in Portland at one facility for Multnomah County. There are a couple of other places in Eugene and Medford where those autopsies are done, but for a lot of the rural parts of the state, the bodies for, and this is again for required autopsies for medical examiners, their cases do come to Portland. I think, though, that if we were to look, one thing we would find is that there are more places around the state that do have pathologists that are capable and competent to do autopsies in their hospital. However, I don't think that every hospital actually has those capabilities.
How about St. Charles and Ben? Do you know?
Chair Fisher, Senator Morissette, I don't know that, but I can certainly find that out if you want.
Thank you.
Well, I have known of conditions in other states where autopsies have been performed in funeral parlors. And whether that's done today in practice in Oregon, I don't know. But this was in Washington State. When I was in college, I had a cousin that worked in a funeral parlor, and they did autopsies in their preparation room. But qualified personnel came in to conduct those, but just did that in their facility.
Right. And Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I can't answer that, whether or not that's happening in Oregon or not.
Ms. Cruzen testified that at least one of the funeral parlors that they checked with did that here, or they did it in their facility. Would this particular bill require that only of hospitals, I'm trying to find out here, would that be for all autopsies, regardless of where they were done? Mr. Cheek, would you want to come and maybe help us out a little bit? I appreciate your sitting in here.
Charles Cheek, Deputy Legislative Counsel. Yes, as the bill is drafted, Chair Fisher, this says that before an autopsy may not be conducted without prior written consent. It does not specify by a hospital or research institution. It just says before an autopsy can be conducted, there must be one of these forms.
So we would not inadvertently be leaving any one out of this, and then that form that was developed would be required of anybody anywhere.
Right, it's a uniform state form that would be required by the health department.
Okay.
Chair Fisher, yes. Members of the committee, my name is Rod Norton. I was the attorney for the Oregon Health Science University who represented the university in the lawsuit brought by Mr. and Mrs. Cruzen. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that any of the committee members may have. I was with the case from the beginning to the very end. So I can answer questions on behalf of the university if anyone has any.
Do any of you three see a problem with some of the suggestions here that OSHU has brought about as far as the process of being able to do telephone consents and that type of thing? And would that be allowed, for instance, over a parent? Let's say that a parent did not wish to have an autopsy done, but if two siblings telephoned in, could they override the parent?
Chair Fisher, the bill is structured to mirror the requirements as in organ donations, and it reflects a priority of authority. The highest ranking authority would control. So the first on the list, that either spouse of the decedent would be the first, they would have the ultimate decision-making authority. If the spouse did not make or could not make the decision, then it would go to the next category.
I see.
So it's not a vote, it's a prioritization of authorities. In regards to the telephone consent issue, the bill was drafted at the request of the requester as from the perspective of really a consumer approach, and that's why it asked for the public health officer and the state medical examiner to develop the form, mm-hmm. as opposed to OHSU or some other medical institution.
Okay. I don't have a particular problem with that. I'm just trying to clarify here. This is not something that I've had much experience in dealing with this particular subject and some of the legalities and things that a person faces, because there certainly is pressure of all kinds at a time when decisions like this have to be made. We need to do it the best we possibly can so it's not confusing. And I wouldn't want to have somebody maybe be denied an access to something that would be necessary if for some reason they could not immediately be on the scene.
Right. As I review the bill, I see nothing in it that would prohibit a facsimile, for example, of the consent form to be sent to the consenting party, have the party execute the form in with the required witness, and then return it to the party requesting authority to conduct the autopsy. Doesn't say it has to be done in person.
Yeah. Well, it says here that they've been doing it apparently as a practice with telephone consent. Is that two persons' consent? I don't think it says that here.
It's a, we say the word monitored, Mr. Chair. We say the word monitored consent by telephone. Generally, two individuals, clinicians or one hospital representative and a clinician, listen on the phone.
I see. So it's two on your end of the phone,
yes.
not two family members.
Precisely.
Okay. Further questions? I thank you all for coming and giving your testimony here. And I would like to talk to Ms. Cruzan again, if she wouldn't mind. Have you had a chance to see a copy of their testimony here?
No, I have not.
Do we have another one?
I have, Mr. Chair, I have requested to see the draft of the limited form as we've been promised. It's now been 4 months, so I am looking forward to seeing what they are working on.
I forgot to have, they are working on one now, or
part of our settlement agreement was that OHSU provide a limited autopsy consent along with the only one they currently use, which is an unlimited form. When we decided to approach this idea of a bill, it was, why stop with OHSU? Why not save everybody in Oregon and hopefully other places from ever having to go through what we did? There is the issue of presumed consent. I don't know if we touched on that much, where I am a little worried that I understand the need to obtain practice and organs and tissues. There's a high demand for it. Been doing a little bit too much research, perhaps, but the documents prove that it is something that they do hold conferences over, ways to obtain consent. I've taken the psychology classes in college also, where it's basically manipulation to some degree, where you can coerce, and that's why I'm being very specific here. This is my opinion that I recognize the need, but I also recognize the more importance of people making informed consent. If you are agreeing to something, you need to know in its entirety. I disagree that it's too much for a family member. I can guarantee you it's much worse hearing about it afterwards. I believe that they cannot treat the public like we are children. I don't like being addressed to as a child. I figure we can handle it. This is our responsibility. We need to have everything set out as it's meant to be. I'm wondering, even regarding the tests, the Senate bill at the bottom does refer to tests. I would hope that that would incorporate any tests would be before, during, or after the autopsy, which would involve practice of intubation or catheterization, because when you give a consent to an autopsy, it is either limited or unlimited. I believe if it's unlimited, perhaps you might be more open to something along those lines, but it, again, falls in the line from the research I've done on presumed consent. If you don't know, you can't object.
Do you have a problem, as the bill reads, with the public health officer, in consultation with the state medical examiner, shall develop and make available standard written autopsy consent form?
Well, again, I think it would be important to take a look at it, or have somebody who is not a medical professional overview it to see how it reads, because we were very clear
from our standpoint, and I would think if somebody was in a position in their job, in our case, she was in her job for 27 years, how there can be a misinterpretation when no means no. So again, keeping in mind the language, plain language, definitions, I think, you know, if there is a mistrust, if some people, for the reasons that they say, they're having a harder time getting consent or ways to get greater percentages for donation, I think the first step would be honesty. Be forthright. Let people know what they're agreeing to. I think you might be surprised. If people are okay with it, they'll be okay with it. If they object, they shouldn't have to explain or be coerced or misled. If they don't want to, they should not have to be put through something like we were.
What I'm trying to do is to try to figure out a way we can logically do this within a bill. It's pretty hard to name you as the... within a bill to name you as the one that would pass final judgment on the on the form, and I don't even think we'd want to put that kind of a burden on you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to think of how we might, Senator Brown.
Mr. Chair, I don't know. And with Dr. Higginson here, I assume this would go somewhat through the rulemaking process, and that there would be opportunity for public comment. I know it might make some people nervous, but you probably want to have some lawyers look at it as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, you know, I'm not sure that this would require rulemaking. How I would envision this process working is first to see if the state medical examiner and I can find a state-of-the-art consent form for autopsies. The one may already exist. So we'll work with hospitals around the state to see what forms are already using, and then also do some research around the country to see what people are doing. I would then want it to be reviewed by healthcare professionals that are going to be potentially asking for autopsy so that they make sure that they're comfortable with that. And then I also would plan on having it go through some kind of consumer focus group to make sure that the language was very clear, because I think we're all agreeing to the same thing, that it's a very, very difficult time, but families deserve the opportunity to make the decision they're going to be the most comfortable with. So having that test of running it through a focus group or some other way through consumers' eyes, it would be an important part of the process.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Morrison.
Would legislative intent be enough to do that? I mean, and wherever we do the legislative intent on, as a carrier of the bill?
Yeah, I think it would have to be done definitely on the Senate floor or the House floor in the process to make sure that the intent was followed, because my understanding is that that's about as far back as they go if they're examining something in the future for legislative intent, is the floor speeches and the carrying of the bill and the closing of the bill. Senator Morrison.
Ask Mr. Cheek to nod or shake his head if he thinks legislative intent is sufficient to ensure. And if you are going to talk, you better come up here. You don't think it is? Okay. That's fine. Just trying to simplify.
Would you have any intent, anything against Dr. Higginson of going ahead and outlining that process here in the bill that you've outlined?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Brown.
I think if you do that, you're going to have some fiscal concerns, would be my guess. And if you don't do it, the only thing you can hold Dr. Higginson to is his word, because otherwise you're going to have to put it in the bill.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair, if I may interrupt. I do have a copy of a consent here that I obtained from University of California, San Diego. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I pulled this, it's very simple. I'm not to say this is a model, but it does point out a couple of things that I found interesting. First and foremost, they had no question and no debate. They faxed it right over to me, which I was pleasantly surprised. It does say, I don't have that many copies. May I bring one up?
Yes, please? We may have some made, okay. Too.
Yes, I wasn't planning on inserting this in the packet because I felt it was just some other research.
There with our staff.
Oh, okay. why I brought it was because it's very simply put that in simple language and easy to read, and they do address that the limitations, and they do regard head, which I found interesting because that's not noted, even though they took Stephanie's brain. We asked. Nobody knew at first, but upon further examination, we did learn that her brain was removed. They do go into the eyes and spinal cord, chest, extremities. And most importantly, it does acknowledge the removal and retention of organs or tissue for study, diagnosis, other scientific or therapeutic purposes, or even, when appropriate, the treatment of living patients, which, again, on some of the research I've done, follows suit with the selling of, like, Duramat or some other human remains, the pituitary gland. There is a market for a lot of the remains, which I found it difficult to think that they would be discarded. I would like to add that the public should know if that is part of the intent or an option that is a possible option for their loved ones' remains.
Mr. Chief?
No.
Senator Fisher, I would just concur with what Senator Brown said, that if the intent of the legislation is for something to actually happen, it would be more effective to put it in the bill rather than relying on legislative history or some interpretation thereof. On the other hand, instructing, for example, the Department of Human Services to adopt the form by rule would involve rulemaking, which is not free.
So if we put in here anything to the effect that it would have to be reviewed by an outside group, or even though they would do that on their own without charge, if we put it in here, that implies a charge.
No, I was saying only if the desire of the committee was to amend the bill to instruct that the department adopt the form through rulemaking. Certainly the bill could be amended to include a provision for a consumer representative with the two public officers that are or study group or something like that to participate in the development of the form and remain silent on their compensation. But I'm just saying rulemaking involves a formal process.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Brown.
I think what Charlie's saying is that we have to take Dr. Higginson at his word, and I guess I'm willing to do that. I've worked with him for a number of years now, and I feel pretty comfortable if he says he's going to have a public process and work to get the state-of-the-art form. I feel like he's going to do that. That being said, the committee needs to be aware that that's not legally enforceable. But certainly, if we come back and it's not done in 2 years, Dr. Higginson will know he will get a spanking. The other concern, if we do amend the bill to require some type of process, there will be a fiscal impact, and the Senate President's office will be forced to send this bill to Ways and Means, where it will probably stay.
Thanks. Very politely put. Senator Morrison.
I didn't hear Charlie say that. I heard him say that you could put a process and leave out any compensation, and that the bill would require that you go through a process, but it wouldn't designate compensation, so there'd be no fiscal impact.
If I could clarify what I was saying, yes, please. Chair Fisher, Senator Morissette, what I was trying to indicate, rather articulately, was that in line 19 of the bill, where we have the public health officer in consultation with the state medical officer, we could, for example, add language to the effect and a consumer representative or something of that line along those lines, which doesn't change the nature of the process into a formal procedural adoption of a form by rule. I think I agree completely with what Senator Brown is saying, that if you formalize it, that requires a department to do it, and the department has legal requirements to formally adopt rules, which include hearings, which involve staff, and which incur expense.
Mr. Chair,
yes, sir.
I think we're missing each other. I think if we add consumer, you would consult with the consumer group, that would solve the problem, period. Right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, as long as it does not appear in the bill that this would be substantial cost. I mean, I was asked prior to developing my testimony if this was going to have any fiscal impact, and what I said was the way that this is written, you know, this is something that Karen Gunson and I could do within existing resources. If If it appears, though, that we've gone beyond that and there's going to be advisory committee meetings and we're going to be paying for people to travel, then there's going to be some real serious questions asked about whether or not we really can say there's no fiscal impact. I think that you probably could add something, like the state public health officer will ensure that there is input from lay members of the public in the review of the form, you know, that we could do something like that, as long as it was...
Is that okay?
Sure. That, I think that's what I was saying.
Well, yeah. I have.
Higginson says he's going to
accept.
Senator Brown, I happen to agree with you because I was here one time when bill passed through with no fiscal to it, and it just literally read that somebody could do something, and it wasn't a mandatory thing or anything, but there was in the between the lines read that it had a fiscal. Do it simply because if you put somebody in there, they have a right to get paid.
Okay. So the bottom line is don't screw up.
Okay. Chair Fisher and Senator Brown and Senator Morissette, I appreciate the confidence you have in me, and well, you should hold me accountable for this, and I will make sure that there is that consumer input.
I would say after setting in on your pain and symptoms committee and the way you conducted that and the manner in which the work was done, I too have confidence that you would see this fairly through, and I would not be unwilling to do that.
Appreciate
especially
it,
knowing that probably if something like that didn't happen, there would be other legislation that 2 years from now that probably would not be anyways near as favorable as this is.
He'd have a hard time getting his budget through.
Yeah.
Right.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Palmer.
Mrs. Brusen has brought us a consent form here from another state. I'm sure you're used to looking at what other states have done to resolve these kinds of issues, and I would feel a lot more comfortable if you would tell me that you would be looking at other states and it wouldn't take much time to develop something that would serve the needs of
Senator Bonas, you did do that. He said they would go both statewide and nationally for them.
Thank you.
Do you have a question? No problem. I want to leave you out if you saw something. Ms. Cruden, do you have a problem with the telephone request?
I need to think on that a little bit at this time. I don't believe that that would be an issue if it was in the order along the lines of somebody not being able to be there in person. I would say that that was agreeable.
It would seem to me like that would be a fair thing to allow, and certainly something that might not increase expenses at a time when there's probably extra expenses anyway. I don't think there's a reason to go into a work session necessarily today, because I think I would like to have an amendment drawn, and I would like to have Charlie, if you could make sure that just as soon, I'll give you permission right now to go ahead and send that to Mrs. Cruz and then to the OSHU and to Dr. Higginson just as fast as it can be done.
Will do.
All right. Thank you very much, and you can work with my staff here on the
organization. Who?
Committee staff. Is there further questions? Thank you so much, and thank you, Mr. Cruzing, for coming. And we hope that at least some feeling of worth will come from your efforts on this. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 885, and I'm going to go out of order here a little bit because we have a busy representative that's over here to give us a little testimony on HJM 3, so we'll open a public hearing on HJM 3 and ask Representative Butler to...
Can we require him to take that hat off when he testifies?
No, sir. That's he's promoting
there,
beef.
Is there still something there. It's
sacred about the Senate testimony?
That cracks me up every time I see him with that hat on.
As a producer of beef, I'm delighted to see that cap.
Thank you very much, members of the committee. Tom Butler from House District 60. Today we have a House joint memorial that Senator Abel Gorby and I have prepared for your consideration, and it comes to you as a House joint memorial, having passed the House, to express support for the participation of the nation of Taiwan in the World Health Organization. Now, just to bring out 5 points, Representative Hobson says I am far too lineal, but I'm just going to bring out 5 points as to why it's important that we consider our support for House Joint Memorial Number 3. Taiwan is Oregon's sixth largest trading partner in the world for the state of Oregon, and it is our sister state. We have a sister relationship with Taiwan and have enjoyed this relationship since 1986. And since the time that we established our sister relationship, we have remarkable growth within our relationships and a lot of Taiwanese students exchanging here in Oregon and back and forth. Number two, Taiwan has demonstrated both its ability and its desire to share its health resources with other nations. The global health is without boundary, and it's a matter of basic human rights. We're familiar with the SARS disease and recognize that even though this is going on in Taiwan and now many other nations, yet today Taiwan is denied access, and the World Health Organization participate in resolutions of this particular disease. It's not only unfair, but it represents a weakness in our global health structure. And number three, Taiwan's contribution to the world health has continued to be demonstrated in the amounts of resources that they have dedicated from their national budgets to world health and the health issues. They continue to fight AIDS internationally, other dangerous diseases, and they continue to donate millions of dollars to global funds for tuberculosis and malaria. And number four, mainland China really can't care for the health issues of the Taiwanese people, as the mainland China has never spent any of its national budget on the health needs of the Taiwanese people. And finally, really, health is a global issue. It should not be a political issue. And I would sincerely request and appreciate your support for House Joint Memorial Number 3 to establish our favorable support for Taiwan's participation in the World Health Organization.
Thank you, Representative Butler. Yes, Senator Morrison.
Out of curiosity, how many other... Now, Taiwan is not recognized by China as being independent. They recognize them as being part of their entity. We don't, though. How many other nations of the world that are recognized as nations are not part of the World Health Organization?
Mr. Chair, there are a number of nations places that have recognized Taiwan or have expressed their support for Taiwan, and I'm sorry I can't tell you exactly for Taiwan to come into the World Health Organization, but as to how many other nations are in the situation that Taiwan is in, there's very few. There's some border disputes here and there as to who belongs to what.
But most of the world
participates in the World Health Organization, and Taiwan's unique situation as our sister trading state in the Pacific Rim. Oregon should surely come join other states, as other states have done, and come on board to support their participation in the World Health Organization, particularly during the time of SARS and AIDS and other tuberculosis and other epidemics.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience wish to testify on the bill? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on HJM 3.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Brown.
I would move HJM 3 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Brown moves HJM 3 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Burdick.
Aye.
Senator Clarno.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
Aye.
Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Senator Fisher.
Aye. Representative Brown, can you at least doff your hat to us for that?
You said Representative Brown.
I mean Butler.
People think of us as one and the same.
I've also seen Senator Brown in a hat like that.
Yes.
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
Thank you very much for coming and for your interest in the bill. The bill passes, and we have a carrier. Senator Starr will be the carrier of the bill.
I represent that.
That doesn't count.
Senator C. Starr. Okay. We'll close the work session on HGM 3 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2240.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2240 establishes the Oregon Board of Dentistry account in the State Treasury. It modifies conditions under which the Board of Dentistry may refuse to issue or renew a license. It modifies the procedures relating to applicants failing the licensing exams and limits the duration of proceedings or investigations of applicants, licensees, and former licensees. You do have two amendments. The first one is the Dash 3, which merely adds an emergency clause to the bill. The Dash 4 is a little more extensive, and I believe that Paul Cosgrove might be able to explain that to you.
All right. Thank you very much. I can explain the dash. Which one was the
four?
Dash 3? With the
Dash 3 is the
emergency clause. Yes. We have people waiting here trying to get their license, having moved from Guam, and Guam was not included in the various protectorates or whatever it is that the United States calls some of their satellite territories, and we would like very much to see that expedited, hence the need for an emergency clause. Let's see, Joanne Bones, Jane Myers, and Paul Cosgrove.
Dash 4
include the dash.
Sorry. Exactly. Mr. Chair, can I make a brief comment? I don't think any bill worth its salt should pass 58 to nothing. I mean, there's got to be at least someone voting who doesn't like it. I don't know if you even want to hear a bill that nobody, that everybody likes. Or would you please give us the downside?
We'll give Senator Schrader a chance at it, maybe. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Senator Fisher, members of the committee. I'm Joanne Bones, Executive Director for the Board of Dentistry. And as you can tell, there's no opposition to this bill. The bill is the result of probably the first major review of the Dental Practice Act since Sunset Review went away back in the late 70s. And it proposes some housekeeping, some minor program changes, and some little fixes, such as Senator Fisher alluded to. With the Dash 4 amendments, the three groups represented here are in total support of the bill, and as far as we know, there is no opposition. In the interest of time, I would like my colleagues from the Oregon Dental Association, Dental Hygiene Association, to be able to make their comments, and if you have any questions or if you want me to go through the details, I'd certainly be glad to do that.
Yeah. That's fine if they want to. Just go ahead here, and I would say that Dash 4 amendments do contain the emergency clause also, so we wouldn't have to worry about doing two amendments.
Senator Fisher and members of the committee, Jane Myers for the Oregon Dental Association, and we are in support of House Bill 2240 with the Dash 4 amendment. It clears up some problems that did come over from the House side.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove on behalf of the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association, me too.
Anyone further wish to testify on House Bill 2240? Hearing none, thank you folks for getting together. We appreciate that. I lost a committee member here that has to make it up to Portland right quick, so Senator Burdick will be excused for the rest of the committee time this afternoon. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2240 and open a work session on
House Bill. Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2240.
No, amendments.
Oh, we're going to get one more amendment.
No, it is
the Dash 4.
I would move the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2240.
Senator Morissette moves the Dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2240. Further discussion? Any dissension? Go ahead, staff, and call the roll, please.
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Burdick? Senator Clark?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Senator Fisher?
Aye. The Motion carries, and dash fours have been adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would
Senator Morissette.
House Bill 2240 to the chair of the Senate with due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Senator Morissette moves House Bill 2240 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any dissent? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Mr. Brown?
Aye.
Mr. Burdick? Mr. Clarno?
Aye.
Mr. Starr?
Aye.
Mr. Morissette?
Aye.
Mr. Fisher?
Aye. Motion carries. Yeah. Do we have a carrier?
I'll carry.
All right,
I think I can make someone mad enough to vote no on this bill. I'll carry it. I'll carry it.
Senator Morissette will carry it. And we will close the work session on House Bill 2240 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2517. And we're rapidly losing our members here, so we'll hurry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2517 directs the Department of Human Services to accept Centers for Medicaid and Medicare and Medicaid Services billing, reimbursement, and reporting forms instead of department forms if those federal forms contain the same information as required by department forms.
Well, we have no one.
You have no one here signed up to testify. However, if you have questions, Jim Edge is available to answer those.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
I actually do have a question.
All right. Thank you for being available.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Edge. I'm the Acting Assistant Administrator of OMAP in the Department of Human Services.
Mr. Chair, my question is, do we actually need a bill to do this?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, that's exactly the question that we asked when we reviewed this. We have no particular problem with this bill. We took a neutral position on it. We feel that we were happy to use the federal CMS forms when they're available, to use the standardized forms. And actually, the new HIPAA regulations, the federal HIPAA regulations, require exactly this same thing, to use standardized forms. So in that sense, maybe this bill isn't even necessary, but we don't have a problem with the bill.
Well, I think from my own experience with this that this discussion goes a long ways back when this has been requested time after time after time and nothing has been done. So I think it's probably something that carries a little bit of baggage with it.
I understand.
No other questions? Thank you, Mr. Edge. We appreciate you coming over. I will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2517.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move House Bill 2517 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves House Bill 2517 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'll be a yes vote to get it out of committee and onto the Senate floor. I'm just not sure this is necessary, and but I'm happy to keep things moving along.
The chair recognizes your courtesies. Will the staff take the record?
Senator Brown?
Aye.
Senator Burdick? Senator Clarno?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Morissette
is excused.
Senator Fisher.
Aye. Motion carries. And I suppose I should carry this for the benefit of Senator or Representative Cruz. Motion carries, and we will close the public or the work session on Senate House Bill 2517 and adjourn our committee. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.